The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You're listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Ski. This is the TWBC podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, hey, ladies and gentlemen, greetings one and all, and great to have you on board once again for this latest edition of the TWBC podcast. I'm Tony Lightfoot, and as I say, glad to have you once again on board. And we're starting off a new season in the Northern Hemisphere. Yes, the 2025 Swiss Pro Slalom. And glad to be joined at this this time by Rob Hazelwood. How you doing, sir?
Hello, I'm doing good, thank you.
Not too bad. I'm feeling pretty good. What about you coming into the season?
Yeah, feeling good. I think. I mean, you never really know. Normally, I've played around with a little record tournament at some point, just to give me a little bit of a feel. But I kind of took my practice today as the same kind of thing and tried to take it like as a little record round. So yeah, little bit nervous, but it is, what can you do?
Absolutely. Now, the last time I saw you was in San Marcos, Texas, the collegiate nationals.
Oh, yeah.
So what has kind of happened a little bit from between then and what we're about to witness now?
I think there was a King of Darkness thrown in back there somewhere.
Of course, yeah.
A little trip to California with Marcus in the Flow Point Method, doing a little testing and some ski stuff. And then, yeah, had three months back home, which was the longest off-season I've had in quite a long time, which was, I was a little nervous of, to be honest, because I remember the last time I had an off-season was like, I don't know, a long time that I had some time off, and coming back was real rough, and that was only from a month. So this year was a real good test for me to see, okay, I think you need an off-season, take an off-season and just trust that the stars will align. And it was really good to see that in the last 5 years I can still ski.
Okay.
And that it was so nice to let my body rest, spend a lot more time with family, and yeah, just have some time off. And then I think it was early March, I think, back out to the US. Was doing a little bit of skiing back home in the very, very cold water. But yeah, back to the US in March, and got back on the real grind that is trying to be a professional water skier.
Indeed, and you look pretty good. I mean, you definitely look like that. You've done a little bit of work in the off season, and certainly trimmed out a little bit. And every little bit helps. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, we know what it's like in water skiing. Being heavier is just harder. Had a good season start to the season last year, and I think got a little heavy on the celebrations. a little too much chocolate and cake. But yeah, that was the main goal of the off season was, yeah, you can take time off, but let's try and give yourself a fighting chance when you come back to start the season. Yeah, lost a couple LBs, as they call it in the US, and it's been fun.
All right, so we're here at the Swiss Pro. You've gone through a practice round.
Mm-hmm.
How did that go for you?
Yeah, solid. I mean, you never really know. It did what I wanted to do. Made sure I hit all my gates. And yeah, just tried to kind of look at it as, all right, this is the first time you've had the tournament driver, tournament boat, tournament rope. You know, I haven't used a different rope other than mine for the last 7-8 months, you know, so even little things like that come in. So just, yeah, first time the everything's mixed up a little bit, and it was, yeah, it went well, and I have as a normal amount of confidence rolling into the first event of the year, which is fairly low.
Now this season's going to be an absolute cracker, isn't it, going forwards? I mean, beyond the Swiss Pro Slalom, Did you ski in the Masters qualifier yesterday?
And no, I made it in. I managed to make it in Botas last year, so
oh, yeah,
I won
of course,
the Botas,
of course,
which
yeah.
Got my ticket in, which is a pleasant ticket to get, so you don't have to do all the qualifying.
Yes, indeed. As some of the other folks yesterday, the day before. I mean, from what I understand, Thomas de Gasperi punched his ticket
yes,
in.
Yes, he did. Yeah, and I mean, it's tough. You got to essentially win it. A low field pro event, but and we've seen the men's field. You take out a three quarters of the field, and there's still as they showed yesterday, I think, was it 4 or 5 3-at-41s happened in a two-round event? So,
and then they had to do like a runoff, didn't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, so it's at any point to come, if you give pros an entry, and even if it's obviously reduced with the people that have already made it, the scores are going to be high, and it's going to be real tough to go and win that thing. So, yeah, Tigas did awesome. Yeah, it was, I'm sure it was a good event, but yeah, to make, for one person to make the spot, then two next weekend, that's tough. I feel like that could have been done in one weekend.
Yeah, how do you feel generally about the whole LCQ process, you know? Because, I mean, I know that a lot of skiers are just over it, you know?
I mean, for me, I'm going to start with saying that the Masters, to me, is the most important tournament in the world, I think. I think Worlds is close, but Masters has been something that I've watched every year, that pavilion. I remember making it my first year. The fact that everything that you'd done, like when I was a junior, when I went, everything I'd done the year before put me in that point. You know, I had a great year, and that was like you've been rewarded with this event. So obviously that's changed with the LCQs a little bit, but the Masters still, at the end of the day, is the event that I'm always going to want to be at. And always be incredibly honoured to be at, and the effort that they put on to promoting the event and making it is what it is. I mean, it's such an awesome venue. But yeah, I mean, little things like, realistically, could they have done it in one weekend for the men? One person qualifying this weekend, two next weekend. People have got to travel twice. It's a lot. And my only real, I think, fair complaint about it, and again, I think it's fantastic and I love the Masters and everything they do, but is... it is the fact that, like, I have some skiers at our ski school back home that are going to want to make the Masters. They're going to want to make the Junior Masters. And yeah, they now have to come a month before just for the privilege to try and make it, spend thousands to try and make it. And I understand that it is a US Masters, but it's kind yeah, of a shame. Like, Harley Costa, he's 15 years old, but he's absolutely shredding. And I kind of said, look, let's maybe not do it this year because, you know, it's a long way to go. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of time and effort. When he may have made it if he skied well, it's his first year in the category, but it's so much time, effort, money to try and make it. And this is more as the juniors. We're pros. We have to be in the US. It's our choice. But for the juniors, that's my literal only real complaint about the situation. But it is what it is, and it's the US Masters. So I will always fight to be there, and I think that it's an event that I cannot wait to ski in and be on that pavilion.
Yes, and I'm glad you brought up Ollie Costa and someone like him, you know, that's got a whole bunch of events on the schedule this season, as does you, you know. So, I mean, beyond the Masters, what would be your next event after that? Would that be Lake 38?
Yeah, I think Lake 38, I need to enter that. It's coming, Keith, sorry. I think Lake 38. It's close to Europe and close to going home, but I think it's
some of your best scores have been produced there, right?
And won last year, so I should really realistically go back as first ever pro win, defending champion.
It'll be impolite not to.
I don't know what the polite move is, but I feel like I should definitely. Yeah, like you said, I've had some good times there, and it's close with Europe and going home, and I mean, it's literally the start of, I think, like a 7-week run. With, five different countries thrown in there.
Morocco being the first of them,
yeah,
right?
Morocco, France. No, yeah. No, Monaco.
Monaco, then
Monaco, Morocco, Morocco, France again, Spain, Italy, I think. So I'm incredibly privileged. It's a lot. It is a lot to do all of that and travel, and it's exhausting. And last year was tough with the midweek events, which was a really interesting challenge, but it made it physically incredibly demanding, and mentally, more importantly. So this year is going to be a little more spread out with having the week gap in between them all. So, yeah, I mean, you just got to try and do what you're going to do and see what you can perform. But at the end of the day, it's going to be hopefully a lot of fun to look back on, and hopefully some good memories pop out of it.
Yeah, that river course in Rabat is going to be an interesting one. You're looking forward to that?
Yeah, it didn't take long to scroll from the sea to the site. So, and that's quite zoomed out on maps, zoomed in on maps. But yeah, it's the same as Swiss. It kind of levels everyone out. No one knows what to expect. It's going to be a mess. At the end of the day, you've just got to kind of hold on. Is the only way that I can describe it. And that's like my first event of the year. It's like, you got to not think and just hold on. You got to throw yourself into the boy, commit, and hope that you swing across to the next side and then do that all again. And that's what it's going to be. Like I spoke to Vince, conditions could be fine. They could be okay. They could be more than acceptable. But then you get 5 mile an hour little breeze and it's going to be a challenge. So that's the part of it. It's
a tidal course, you know. I mean, there could be about a four meter differential between high and low.
Yeah, and then you obviously have the tides in itself, the wind. But again, it's like back in like my uncle's day and Mick's day. It was that was every event they went to, you know. So it's a privilege to be able to go to those things and. I know it's a small field, so again, it's like the Masters. I'm pumped to have been able to do it, and I think it would be wrong of me and to take any sort of opportunity that I get and not be happy. So yeah, I'm super excited. Wind, rain, shine, it's going to be an amazing experience. I know Vince and Camille and his whole family have tried incredibly hard. The hotel sounds like it's going to be fantastic again.
Yeah.
I mean, last year the food was just that was probably the starting contribution to my gain. But it was just and again, the skiing at that kind of place is important, but it's not important. You go there for the life and the lessons that it's going to teach you. And if you come out and ski good, then hell yeah. But it'll be an experience, that's for sure.
This year's a world year. Obviously that world's tournament is going to be towards the end of August, so quite a ways off there. So
is it, what, 10 tournaments before that?
Just a few. But I mean, have you basically penciled in that tournament as a priority for you, or other ones?
I think, realistically, what, four? This is the fourth year on tour for me. 21, 22, 23, 24, 25. Fifth year on tour. So we are used to, especially in the last couple of Europe tours, some of our best performances and some of my best performances are in the middle of a 6-week stint where you haven't slept in your own bed, where you're traveling, where you're actually probably truly an athlete, right? There's hardships on the side of the event. It's not just an incredible experiences, but you're not rested, you're not perfect, you're not training for 2 months on this perfect man-made lake to go to this another perfect man-made lake to try and beat everyone on the day. So for me, I've never done that well in overemphasizing things in my head. I just want to go and ski. I will train. It's kind of at the end of a gap of events, and now unfortunately Hilltop is no longer. It's like, I think, a six week gap before the next event. So that's the kind of time you could mellow out a little bit and soften up and do a little less skiing. So it's going to force me to ski. It's going to force me to train. And obviously with a busy ski school back home, it's just prioritizing making sure there's some time in the day for me to ski. And I'm just pumped on it. And I mean, again, there's every man and their dog goes to world, so it's just all of the people who maybe throw in one or two pro events of the year, they show up and make it a real battle. So it'll be fun.
Let's talk about some of the other stuff that you do. I mean, you've done a lot on social media and what have you, videos and vlogs for HO Skis, which you'll no doubt continue to do. But you did allude to the fact that you're doing some coaching, you know, some ski school over at Hazelwoods, you know. So I'm guessing in that gap, that's where most of what you do instructionally wise takes place, right?
Yeah, it's an interesting one because I see a lot of people work at ski schools, and it is what it is. It's a job. Whereas I've always lived on the lake. I've always been around, and we're not necessarily a ski school as such. We've turned more into one as the years pass on, but I don't want to make it a place where it's. I want to make it a place where people go water ski, and that's what it has always been. Mm-hmm. It's always been, and incredibly lucky for me, it's been a place where you go to ski and have fun and do your stuff, and there's generally lots of knowledge around, so you learn how to become better. But it's not a training. I don't want it to be necessarily a training camp, which it is, and we're trying to make the best in the world, right? Like you say. We have a lot of skiers that are absolutely insane and ripping. So it's just a different experience for me than when a lot of people think ski school, they think 12 hours in a boat and misery. I think, you know what, let's go and take some kids, let's have some fun. And,
yeah, I know all about that.
And if it becomes that, I don't think that's the best place to grow and learn. You know, we want the kids to be able to come down to the lake for 6 weeks. I mean, the members and be able to learn. They learn how to drive a boat. They learn how to go play on the back lake. They learn how to slippery slalom. They learn how to do the whole childhood that is
back lake is legendary.
It is, and I spent hours and hours and hours going on that. And that's why we are essentially a ski school nowadays. But realistically, we're trying to be. So I mean, I've gone miles away from your question, but
that's fine.
Essentially. When I go home, I feel like I'm just helping out in a way. You know, I'm trying to kind of help the next generation come through. I mean, we have some fantastic skiers, and yeah, it's some hours in a boat every now and then, but it's a lot of fun. And obviously, the lake we have is absolutely perfect. I think outside of America, it's one of my favorite places to ski. So I don't really have any complaints about going home and spending a little time in the boat. It's a lot of fun. I'm very appreciative of being able to have that at my back door, and I can't wait to get back, see some family, see the girlfriend, and have a fun summer.
Notwithstanding the fact that in England the weather is a little bit unpredictable, you know, so that kind of toughens you up a little bit, doesn't it?
It does, and it was interesting. I went back a couple of weeks ago, and it makes you work for your skiing. For the last 3 years, I've been 4 years since I haven't realistically spent a ton of time back home when it's been cold. This was the first winter where I did, and it made me sit there and go, right, you just go ski. You don't think about it. Just don't go, oh, it's warm, let's go have a day. It's like, right, it's crap, but you're going to Florida in 2 weeks, you got some ski testing to be done, you got to show up, right? And in the end, I kind of took my training pretty seriously the last kind of couple weeks before I came out to the US, and it made me grind for my ski, and it made me appreciate how nice it is when I'm here. Whereas if you only ski in Florida and you only ski in Chile and these beautiful countries, where the weather is just so consistent and hot, you become mellow to the fact that you have to actually, it's a job. You know, you have to actually work for it. I became a little maybe lazy and didn't necessarily take it as, right, this is your job. Your job is to be healthy. Your job is to train when you need to. And I mean,
to put yourself in the best position to perform.
The on-water stuff has never been my issue. If you've ever listened to anything I've ever done, podcast, or you know, I love the slalom. I love slalom. I love trick. I love jump. But I love slalom. And doing the time on the water isn't tough. But I think being in such warm climates maybe mellowed out that feeling of, hey, let's go do it, let's get better, let's not just ski, let's get better. And that transferred into off water and yeah, just created something that is a lot of fun and really, really kind of reignited that fire inside me, and kind of spending time at home makes me want to do better when I'm out here and hopefully put something together.
Indeed, indeed. Now, I did allude to the fact that you've done a lot of podcasting, a lot of work on social media and what have you. You know, it's hard to imagine you actually having the time to do all of that kind of stuff in between your skiing and the training and what have you. But in this day and age, you've got to set aside some time to actually do that, because it's critical to the whole brand of HO and Rob Hazelwood.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, to me, they're kind of one. I like to think that. I mean, I enjoy it. We ski for 15 minutes a day, obviously. Lake life sucks hours. It's funny, my girlfriend doesn't, she wasn't a skier, and she didn't really understand that. And I was at the start, I'm like, look, like, you go to a lake and day's gone. Like, you never leave. People chat, you know, it's a community, and it's kind of the same thing. So the lake life part of it is takes a long time out of your day, because it does, but realistically, we have time to do that other stuff. And it's part of the responsibilities to be able to help your sponsors, help your brands, and I enjoy a lot of it. It's at the end of the day, it's a skill to have and to use, so it's a lot of fun.
All right, I mean, we're in the middle here at Swiss Pro 2025. You've skied, as we've alluded to, and we're seeing a few people turn up, and my question to you is, I mean, with the season about to kick into high gear, who are you looking out for to make a a significant impact going forward aside from yourself?
Me? No. That's a question. I mean, who knows? I don't even know who's going to the events, a lot of them. I mean, Corey Vaughn had a killer year last year.
He almost qualified for the Masters, didn't he?
He did. He was very close. I mean, you can never take Poland out of any equation. What, 2 podiums on tour last year in slalom? And obviously, jump and trick is fairly phenomenal as well.
Yeah.
But I honestly, I don't know. It's the best thing about last year. We showed that it was a free-for-all. It literally is anyone's game on anyone's day. Obviously, Freddie was out for the count for most of last year, but so no one really knows what we're seeing from him. Nate was working and still working, so there's a lot of circumstances that have changed. Tim Tonkvist, he came onto tour pretty sharpish last year and really showed he's got some stuff. So who knows? You have your favourites in Will, Nate, Freddie, but the best thing that last year showed was, it's there's so much depth at 441 and 3 at 41 that if you do it once, you're throwing your name in the field, and the best can fall and falter if you can put a good score out there. So it's exciting.
Yes, indeed. And being able to get a better than average turn on your offside, you know, you're right foot forward, aren't
yes.
you?
Yes.
So, which means that the first buoy is going to be on your right side, left foot, right foot forward. Not exactly the best of starts for
40.
It's a challenge.
Yeah, the one's a mess. The two is what it is. It's surprisingly still tricky, and then three is just the real headache. So, I mean, I don't think there's any negatives or... Well, there's obviously negatives and positives, but I don't think there's necessarily outweighing negatives and positives. I think both sides have it tough because it's slalom and the sport's incredibly tricky. But, yeah, it's... Yeah, getting a four, whether you're a lefty or righty, that my theory is that if the cut is 4 and above, it's probably better to be a lefty. If the cut is 3 or something along those lines, it's better to be a righty, which is obvious, right?
That's yeah,
it's fairly obvious, but the thing is the forced move. If the cut is 4 or that kind of 3, 2.5, you kind of, it's more 2.5, 3 area, as a righty you're taking that hesitation into 3, whereas if the cut is 3 as a lefty, you're like, well, I've got to commit to 2 no matter what. So if they can at least put that 100% to it, and it's tricky. I mean, it's hard for everyone, and there's been a hell of a lot of strong lefty performances as of late, in Dane and Cole and Tim and all those people. So I think at the end of the day, water skiing is very hard, and get your kid to be a righty early on because it's better.
Indeed. And aside from what the athlete does on top of the water, whoever's behind the helm has got a pretty tricky job by himself. You know, I mean, we got Scott Greenwood. I mean, he's like one of the world's best.
He's a robot, that guy. I mean, those numbers are spot on every time. It's incredibly... The drivers is, and it's actually, I think, worse with Shorepath. I think we train with Shorepath every day, so it's like a dog. You give a dog a treat when it does well. It learns how to do well. And like, one, that's good for driving, but two, as skiers, we get so used to having those tight numbers, and if you have the driver for it, you almost have an ingrained short path in your head. So drivers have an even harder chance than they used to. But yeah, you come somewhere like here, you get Greeny in the seat, you know that you get in for something incredible, and it's a hell of a lot of fun.
All right, then we'll close off this podcast at this time. Thank you very much, Rob. Is there any parting words you would like to say as you get ready to kick the 2025 Northern Hemisphere season into high gear?
I mean, that 41 that we just saw from Nate was pretty impressive. Give you that on the practice screen. That was quite impressive. parting words. No, thank you, family. Thank you, T. Thank you, everyone. And I don't know. Let's do this.
Excellent stuff. And this has been the TWBC podcast episode with Rob Hazelwood prior to the start of the 2025 Swiss Pro Slalom. So from me and from him, it is ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC Podcast.